During lockdown, I think we all suffered from Zoom fatigue as we tried to catch up with pals and family. But if I didn't have Zoom, I would never have come across Connie Keane, the producer, singer, DJ and musician who works as Fears. We are both DJs on Dublin Digital Radio and we met at the Zoom after party, it's a thing, I swear, for one of her shows. Featured recently on the Virgin Media documentary Darkness into Light, Connie is extremely open about the mental breakdown she experienced a few years ago. She puts her experiences into songs, and the way she speaks about her mental health is just so eloquent and to the point. In this episode, we speak over Zoom, our old friend, about the process of putting so much of yourself into your music and how we need to have better conversations around mental health. I must highlight some trigger warnings for depression, suicide and self-harm before we go ahead. And please, please excuse my dog for barking around the halfway mark. Working from home takes its toll on all of us. We have really kind of met in such like strange circumstances because it's totally. Been through Zoom, discos,
it's because beautiful.
Weird. And like, how have you been, because like you DJ normally, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we could say that. I press the play button on a CDJ.
Same.
I do that. I kind of decided a few years ago with my friend Dawn, who started the 343 in Belfast. We really liked playing music out and really wanted to have a space where we could all have a good time and stuff. But we're not the most technically gifted DJs, and it took a real kind of look in the mirror and just being like, actually, do I want this to stop me doing it? Or do I just want to go throw a night and have a really good time? So we just started doing that, yeah. And that's how I ended up being a DJ, as they say.
That is exactly how I am a DJ. And it's always an inverted commas, but a lot of my friends are like, you need to get rid of the inverted commas because there's loads of people out there who like actually have careers like this.
I know. I think my dream is just to be like Paris Hilton, though, where somebody else is pressing play. But I just get to choose the music.
I'm quite curious about Paris Hilton's DJing career because I feel like she probably can do stuff.
Like, I hope so. That random arm appearing at that Ibiza set or whatever she was doing from like under the table.
Doesn't have the same like color fake tan that she has on. You're like, hang on.
And you're like, different arm, Paris. Still love you though.
Yeah. No, she's got many tricks up her sleeve, so I won't deny like her prowess.
I know. I think as well, in general in life, I just love the scam. And like I'm totally comfortable claiming I'm a DJ in the lens of me just loving the scam. It's like, yeah, I mean, people can call me DJ, that's totally fine. I'm happy to do that. If it means like people are happy with what I'm playing and we're all having a good time. Currently it's our bedrooms and sitting rooms, I think. You're in your kitchen sometimes.
Yeah, today I'm in my bedroom, yeah.
Same. Just lying on my bed.
I think there is something like weirdly unifying about it, because like I've been hating Zoom conversations a lot of the time because I find them really draining.
Oh, this is going great then.
Yeah. No, thanks. But the Zoom discos, there's something really different about them because
they're so fun.
Yeah.
It's less pressure. I think as a person who, I'm not a particularly like, oh, look at me kind of person. And I think when you're in a Zoom conversation and there's like, you know, six or more people in it, especially if there's people that you don't know that well, it can be kind of like a high pressure situation to start talking in, I find anyway. And I definitely feel a lot more comfortable dancing like an Egypt rather than being like, well, actually, I think, because I mean, you know, that yellow box goes around your little window and you're like, oh my God, did I breathe too loudly? I'm not trying to say anything.
Yeah, because it's totally designed for business conference meetings, so someone is definitely meant to be holding the floor. So like, if you're if you're just agreeing with someone going yeah, then suddenly your box is the speaking box. I would love to kind of hear more about the kind of journey of Fears, because I of course just know you through Zoom, but like, how long have you been kind of like operating under the Fears pseudonym as well?
I started Fears in, I think it was 2012, and I used to do it with another girl, and we did it for maybe about a year and a half or so. And then she didn't want to do it anymore, and that's fine. So I kind of took a step back from it. I started another band, a feminist and animal welfare post-punk band called Male, with some of my friends, because was I was really
spelled
angry.
M-A-L-E or?
It's spelled M-H-A-O-L, like Grania Whale.
Brilliant.
Yeah, because I shaved my friend Roisin's head and I was like, now I have to be the singer of my punk band. So that actually worked shockingly, and we did that for a while, and it was really, really good fun. And it was at a time where I was really angry about how I had been treated, or how I was seeing women getting treated in the Dublin music scene and in the Irish music scene in general. I think it definitely felt like a bit of a lads club at that point. And I think my goal anyway, starting that band, was just to try and make men uncomfortable in green rooms. And I think it worked sometimes. So that was good. And then, you know, I got some of the anger out of my system. Roisin, the singer, moved to New York. She's from here, but she moved to New York for 2 years. And I kind of stepped back and I was like, I think I want to pick up Fears again. It's maybe the music that I naturally write, especially when I'm working on my own. And I've been doing it since then. I put out the first song on my own in 2016 called Blood. And then I'm quite selective with what I put out. I think I've only got 4 songs out. But yeah, it's been a few years now at this point.
And like, that is like such a massive contrasting musical output that you've got, like loud music, and then the music as Fears is just ambient electronic music with sort of like stunning vocals on top of it. So is it, do you think that kind of represents both sides of your personality, or is it just like, what way just do you look at it?
Like 100% it's both sides of my personality. I mean, sometimes I'm happy, not always angry or sad, but I think I'm a person that feels a lot, and a really good way for me to be able to deal with those feelings is having somewhere to put them, which, you know, tale as old as time, putting them into something creative is incredibly productive, I think, even just for personal development. And for me, I write those two different types of music at very different times or different points. With Fears, it's all just done in my bedroom. You know, usually the sun isn't shining in my window when it's happening. And whereas with Mail, it was like something would happen, or I'd remember something and I'd get really annoyed about it, and it would just, like, we'd go into our rehearsal room and work on it all together and figure it out there. For me, Fears is like, Mail is more like my external standoffish vibe, and Fears is like, no, but underneath it, I'm actually really sensitive, if that makes sense.
I really appreciate that there's so much of yourself is put into like your lyrics with Fears, and then again, when you see how much of yourself you put into it, it makes sense that the songs are spaced out over time. Is that like an intentional thing so that you can get a bigger grasp of how you feel about something or what it is that you're actually going through?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of the time with Fears stuff, I write it in retrospect, a lot of it. So I kind of have to have processed something to a certain extent before I can then start writing about it. And also, I guess most of the songs are kind of sad or reflective or slightly passive aggressive. So I need to be enough away from that feeling to do the proper production side of it, not to just be focusing totally on the emotion attached to it. But it kind of, I go through spurts of productivity when it comes to writing music. Like I go 6 months without writing a song, and then completely convince myself that I've broken that part of my brain. I'll never be able to write a song again. I was just lucky that time that I actually wrote something that I liked, and kind of, I'd say I go so far into the extreme of it that I'm just like, well, wave that goodbye because it's never happening again. And in times like that where I'm really struggling, I mean, it's like a the songs come at a completely unconscious moment. That's the only way for me to like break through that. So I think when I have these big gaps in putting things out, it's a lot of the time because I have big gaps in writing. Like I, considering how long I've been doing this project for, I have an album written now and I'm finishing off the recording of it and stuff myself, but that's like quite a few years to only have that much material done. But I think for me, because each song is coming, like you said, from such a personal part of me, I have a very specific idea of what it's supposed to be. And that does actually take time.
And with the song, so Hallways was released in 2016.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, 2016. Yeah. And that song is just so evocative, like the visual elements that you have within the lyrics. That, like I can, so it's spelled H_always. So hospital hallways. And like I've spent a lot of time in hospital as well, and I could just zoom. Damn it, I'm not using the word zoom again. I could just damn you zoom. But I just felt like I was walking down those corridors with you. I could just I could smell the bacteria or the antibacterial exactly. Mops. Everything in hospitals is just so it's like scent and like the everything is white. Like that's just what it is.
Completely. And I think for me, a lot of the images that come into my head when I listen to it, even though like I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but it kind of feels like a different life in a way, because it was such a bizarre experience. But for me, like when I listen to it, it is very specific imagery that like comes like straight back, and it's not like the traumatic imagery, it's just things like looking at the blue curtains that separate your beds and stuff like that kind of thing, like seeing the textures that are around the place, like the color of the lino on the floor, like that kind of stuff is completely what fills my brain when I listen to it. So I'm glad that you like the imagery.
Maybe
relate to the imagery, I don't know.
Yeah, overly familiar with it all. Like there's so many there's so many things that kind of just trigger me back to ever being in hospital. Like one is the smell of kind of like menthol, because when I was a child about to have surgery, I hated injections. So when they were giving me the anesthetic, they used to give me like a flavored anesthetic, and it was always like menthol, and that just like makes me just feel so terrible. Whatever.
Yeah, we don't need to be around menthol.
We don't need those memories whatsoever.
We just don't need them at all. Oh my God, I'm glad I didn't mention menthol in my song.
Thank God.
I scratch out all those lyrics about menthol in my album.
Well, menthol cigarettes are now banned because they're too...
Yeah, I saw that.
Too alluring to young ones. Yeah, so thank God.
I know, for you.
Yeah, and me only.
Only you.
Yeah. Could you tell me about kind of the process that went into kind of writing Hallways?
So I had a mental breakdown. I'm quite blunt when I talk about this stuff, and sometimes it makes people uncomfortable, and that's totally fair enough, because we all have our own associations with these things. But if I come across as being like cracking jokes, or if I'm being too blunt or something like that, it's just my way of dealing with it, processing the experience. Basically I had it's just something emotionally traumatic happened to me, was that 2018? 2017. It was 2017. And I went mad. I went absolutely mad. I used that word for myself. And basically I went into a trauma response. So my brain kind of shut down, and I'd never experienced anything like it before. I had had anxiety and had gotten panic attacks and stuff before when I was a teenager, but this was like next level. I was completely unrecognizable. I was living in Belfast at the time. My mom had to drive up to Belfast and bring me back in the back of the car. And it was a time that honestly I have so many mental gaps in my memory from, because that's, I think, just what trauma does to you. And I was spending my days at home with my family, crying pretty much nonstop. So I went to A&E 3 different times, presenting as suicidal, and it was awful, basically. The doctors there, I mean, you know, some people that you meet are great, but I think a lot of people don't know what to do with you when you have, because I had psychological stuff, not psychiatric stuff. So they don't want to put you into a psychiatric ward somewhere, kind of because you don't tick the boxes for that. And it didn't matter how much I said I was going to kill myself. They just kept discharging me. But what was going on in my head at the time basically was that I was the worst thing like on the entire planet, and that all I do is ruin everybody's lives. So I was in a very kind of skewed place mentally, that it was like a cycle that I just couldn't get out of. Like I was like going further and further into this absolute spiral. And it took, I think it was a month before I actually got into hospital. I went to St. Pat's. I got a referral from my GP and I got into St. Pat's, and it was the exact place where I like needed to be completely. I mean, it's not obviously all sunshine and rainbows and stuff here in a psychiatric hospital, but it was exactly what I needed at the time. And it was, you know, a safe space for me to kind of process some of the stuff that had happened to me, and you know, just even start figuring out self-acceptance. Like, couldn't even go near self-love at that point. I just had to accept that I, as a human being, deserved to not be dead. And it was a really intense experience, and I feel so thankful that I could actually get into hospital. But yeah, it was a lot. And during that whole period, I mean, when I was at home and stuff, I couldn't go near music. I just couldn't. I couldn't do anything that I loved doing, because to me, it was going to be the most heartbreaking experience ever to do something that I love and not love it. And I wasn't going to love anything at that point. So for me, it was too scary to even consider, you know, picking up a guitar or something, because I would hate it. And it would make me feel so bad about myself, because I would think, this is just another thing that I've lost now. Here's another reason why you're shit. So a lot of people say like, yeah, like fill your time with the stuff that you love. But I think that when you're at a certain stage of like, I mean, just I was so far gone that like you, I couldn't imagine doing anything that I loved. So I went into hospital then, and it was incredibly scary at the start. Partially, I think, because, you know, you have very different ideas about what a psychiatric hospital actually is. And I knew I was going to be in there for 6 weeks minimum. And that's a really long period of time when you have never been in a psychiatric hospital before. Like in your head, that seems like a really, really long period of time. I was dealing with like getting separated then from my family, who had been minding me at home, but like they obviously needed a break. And it was petrifying at the start. And basically what ended up happening was, there's a music room in St. Pat's, and when you get approved by the occupational therapist, you can go use it. So you like book in your time slot or whatever, and you go and get the key card and just go spend some time in a room. And to me, I am somebody who really enjoys spending time on my own. And hospital is actually quite a busy place, as I'm sure you know, and it can be very difficult to get time on your own to think about things. And I started going to the music room initially literally just to lie on the floor and cry, because I just needed that space away from people, to kind of let myself show my emotions, and be kind of alone with them and very connected to them, and then be able to then go back out into the rest of hospital and go do the activities that I was doing and that kind of stuff. But basically I was doing that like basically every day for maybe like a week or a week and a half or so before I even touched an instrument. And it was very scary when I first picked up a guitar. But what had happened in my brain by then was that I felt zero pressure to make anything of any quality, because in my head I was like, well, sure, I might die anyway, so like whatever I make in here isn't going to be heard by the outside world, so it doesn't matter if it's crap or not. And almost within that, I ended up with this like huge sense of freedom with my work, because I am quite a perfectionist with it. And to just play instruments and not even be trying to write things was so different for me.
Is there maybe a connection between, normally if you kind of go somewhere where there's instruments, it's to go to rehearse or go to perform or go completely to record, but you had been using the music room as your safe space essentially, and then
it was totally my safe space. I felt really comfortable, even just like, it sounds weird, but I felt really comfortable even just being surrounded by instruments.
Like getting reacquainted with them or something.
I was literally just sitting there and I was like, ah, sure, there's the bass over there. That's grand. Yeah, there's the drum kit. Absolutely fine. Like, it was a space that I felt comfortable in and familiar with. And I think that was really, really big for me, feeling comfortable in hospital in general. So I hadn't written anything in months at that point. And like even pre breakdown, I hadn't written anything for quite a while. And I picked up they had an electric guitar there, and I picked it up one day. And what I do when I'm writing anything is I just like press record on my laptop, and it just sits there like while I'm trying to come up with anything, so that I can always go back to it. And I started playing the incredibly simple guitar line in Hallways. And then I like wrote the song and recorded it in like half an hour.
Right.
And it was just done. And I was like, well, I guess that happened. And I think because I had had so much happen in my brain, and there had been so much confusion and stuff about where I stood on things, that all of that kind of creativity had been stored up like under some kind of seal. And then pretty much once I wrote the guitar thing, it just happened instantly. It was the fastest song I've ever written. And I then like kind of, I listened to it while I would be like in my room and be like, oh, this is actually quite nice. I think I actually like this. And then I emailed Hugh Mulhern, who helped with the video. He's an amazing Irish director. And I emailed him because we'd been working on a video for Blood, my earlier song. And he had like emailed me an update or something like that about the Blood video. And something had like gone wrong or got delayed or something. And he was like, yeah, I'm sorry, like we'll get it sorted, blah, blah, blah. And like, he had no idea that I was in hospital, because nobody knew really that I was in hospital. I had like vanished kind of off the face of the earth, and my close friends would have known, but any kind of wider circle didn't know what was going on. And I emailed him and I was like, don't even worry, like we'll get to the Blood video when it happens. Oh, I'm on a ward right now, like it's totally fine. But I was like, listen, like I've actually written this song, and I've now gotten to the point where I think that it's something that I want to exist beyond just in my own head. Because it obviously comes with all that stuff where you're like, do I talk about this? Do I not talk about this? Like, what is the right context to present this in? And yeah, I sent him over the file like from my room in hospital, and he listened to it and he was just like, yeah, let's do something.
So did you have the entire song like packaged, like done, dusted,
mm-hmm.
when you're, yeah, that's amazing.
So I recorded it just on my MacBook. Like it's just my MacBook microphone. And I produced it on GarageBand like I do with everything. And yeah, it was done. I sent it to get mastered. That's usually the only thing that I get somebody else to do. Sent it to get mastered, got back the file a few days later, and then I was like, here you go, Hugh, work away. So him and this artist called Clodagh Farrelly made the video for Hallways, and even that was such a healing experience. I was like, you know, getting to spend time with people making things that had initially been started in such like a desperate situation was really nice. It was great.
And with your song too, that's coming out next week. That's 2 years on from Hallways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I released Hallways in April of 2018. And two is like a, it's kind of like an answer song, I guess, to it. Like when I listen to Hallways now, I'm in such a different headspace, like completely. But Hallways was also written at a point in time where, like, when you're having a breakdown or something like that, like your mind is changing about things constantly. Like you are convinced of something 1 week, and then a week later you're like have a therapy session and you're like, oh my God, no, it's actually this totally opposite situation. So for me with Hallways, sometimes when I listen to it, I'm like the emotional element of it, I'm like, wow, like that was an interesting way for you to be thinking. For me, it was important then to kind of like reflect on 2 years since it, and you know, my relationship with myself, and what has happened to me as a person, kind of growing from an experience like that, and kind of just as like a little pat on the back to myself, where I was just like, you know what, like you're actually okay.
And in the press release that you sent with the song, I like that you commented on there's not really like such thing as better. There's sort of just kind of acceptance. And I think a lot of people, maybe when they're going through something similar, they really get caught up in the fact that they have been sad or that they are sad. And it's the same, I know, with people going through grief as well. And I remember whenever I've had like my own problems, I remember reading somewhere, and I really wish I could find this quote again, because it's basically saved my life, is sometimes you just have to accept that you are a sad person and work with that sadness in your life. And that completely cut off all the burdens that I had with being a sad person, and it actually made me a happy person, because I didn't feel wrong, because what I was feeling was who I was, if that makes sense.
Totally, completely. I mean, I think we all do have dispositions, and people have, you know, different levels of sensitivity to things as well. Like I am, you know, I am a highly sensitive person, and I feel other people's distress a lot, which is something that I've learned about myself over the past few years, and it's made a lot of my growing up experience make sense to me now. And I, because of that, I know I'm going to spend a lot more time than maybe who isn't as sensitive. I'm going to spend a lot more time than them upset, because I'm feeling the sad energy that everybody is having around me a lot of the time. And accepting that is like, that's incredibly freeing. I know that for me, I kind of had to accept quite early on. Once I got over wanting to die, I kind of had to accept, like, this experience and these feelings that you're having don't define you, but they are a part of you. And what happened to me is a part of me. It doesn't mean that I won't be able to do plenty of other things later on. But I think it's important to acknowledge it and be like, well, that's clearly going to have an impact. You're never going to come out of an experience like that the same as you were going in. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. I know for myself, I have so much more resilience now. I think I'm a lot calmer now. I mean, I'm also on meds, like, so maybe my antidepressants are just really good. But yeah, for me, it's like, I think accepting that this is a part of you just takes a lot of pressure off yourself to constantly be better. And totally, you know, make healthy changes and you know, do things like exercise and do things that like are good for your brain, like having Zoom discos. But at the same time, like, cut yourself a bit of slack, because if you feel a certain way or if something happened to you like that, there's only so much you can expect from yourself. And you're just digging the hole deeper and deeper and deeper, constantly striving for this, like, maybe this point in your life in the past where you think you were truly happy. But like, I mean, that's all just rose-tinted glasses anyway. Like, when are you, oh, this sounds so depressing, oh my God, but like, when are you ever going to be like truly happy? Like, this whole notion of like true happiness, I just think is bullshit, to be honest. I'm happy a lot of the time, but like, what's the difference between that and true happiness? I don't understand. Like, I just think that puts so much pressure on people to like, get to this point where like everything is perfect. It's never going to be perfect.
Because I really think happiness can only exist if you've experienced sadness. So
100%.
So to experience true happiness, you're going to find something else to be totally down and out over. So
exactly, like, you can't... need a comparison.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how are you going to tell?
Stop chasing happiness, guys.
Stop chasing it. Stop. Yeah, happiness is such a strange thing, though. Like, it's really, because it's different for everybody, obviously. And I think that when you have depression or something, you spend like a lot more time focusing on happiness and thinking about happiness than somebody that is maybe not depressed. And I think that just lowering down the goal of like being happy every single day maybe means that you do have pockets of happiness every day.
Yeah, but like, I was about to reference a Westlife song here.
Oh my God, yes.
So, Flying Without Wings, right?
Boom, boom,
boom. They paint a very clear picture of the small pockets of happiness. Shame. Yeah, what a guy. He never lets us down.
Oh, he's
my favorite. Were you a Westlife stan back in the day?
I actually wasn't, but Shane just seems so sound. I mean, I've never met him. I've never met any of them. I will never meet them. But I've literally just always had this thing in my head where I'm like, ah, Shane, go on.
Oh, wow. Just like, he's a stand-up guy.
Yeah, I think so. I think he seems sound. Like, he'd probably be a really good neighbor.
I have an association with Shane where I remember one of my friends was obsessed with him when we were in school, and I was watching a Westlife video with her one stage, like an actual like VHS video of their lives. And all I can remember is that Shane was mad about horses, just loved the love
so
horses.
Much sense.
Yeah, and I was like, horse. Oh, Shane, horses. He's a horse guy.
He loves the horses. Yeah. I can love horses too, Shane. Yeah. We can be friends.
Yeah, invite me to your lovely stud. And,
come on, Shane. I'm depressed.
Help me out. Equine therapy. It's a thing.
It is a thing.
Hopefully he'll listen. I don't know what he does in this spare time.
He listens to everything I do. It's fine.
So two is part of the Northern Ireland Mental Health Arts Festival.
Yes.
That's a mouthful. Had you had the song and video? Because the video looks back on like the 2 years with kind of, you've taken videos with your phone and your friends and families have as well. And your dog features quite prominently.
She does, yeah.
Yeah, she's like a celebrity now in her own right, I feel.
She is.
Yeah, she was on telly. I saw her on telly
she
last
was,
night.
She was in her jacket, in her puffer jacket. God, love her.
Yeah, marching along with the darkness into light. Walk, is that what we call it? It's not a marathon. But I think I hate using the word message as well, but like the message that is kind of in the song and the video is just so important for a mental health festival, because it's not giving the kind of the black and white version of things. It's just that constant progress and process and just moving along.
And I think that that's something that was very important for me to talk about, is that like it's hard when you've been really unwell. It's really hard to accept that there are going to be times when you're not doing great again, because all you want is to have the best time ever and be as happy as Shane is with horses for the rest of your life. But in reality, it's not going to be like that. You know, you're going to have challenges. Life is life. It just is what it is. And it's to kind of like mark the little things as you go along. I'm sure some people would be like, why the hell do you want to mark 2 years since having a breakdown? But to me, it's like, you know, a nice thing to do for myself. And it was important as well for me to talk about a topic that I have been kind of trying to figure out how to talk about since it happened, which is self-harm. Because it just straight up is not talked about at all. And I think that it's absolutely amazing that a lot of other things to do with mental health issues are talked about, you know, so much more than they used to be. But self-harm, I really feel, is left out of that conversation. And it's so taboo and there's so much shame around it. And it's like this really heavy thing that you then carry around. Whereas in actual fact, it's incredibly common. And I think that adding shame and that weight to things is only going to, you know, it makes people be secretive about these things. And if you're secretive about behavioral patterns, you end up doing them more because you get into a loop of it. It's your little secret and you go further and further down that line. From my experience anyway, like that's completely true. And I mean, I would love to live in a, I would love to live in a society where, you know, we're not endorsing it at all, clearly. Oh my God, like self-harm is not a good idea at all. But it's a symptom of a much wider issue. So I would love if we could discuss it more as a symptom. Because at the moment, I think once you bring it up, like people get so uncomfortable, their ears just shut off and they're like, either they've done it themselves and they have a lot of kind of shame about it themselves, or else they just fundamentally don't understand why you would ever want to do that and are so like just freaked out that they don't even want to learn about it. Because they would have never known anybody that self-harmed, when it's actually like, no, you did though. They just never told you that they did. Because for me, it was something that I did. I never did it as a teenager or anything. But it was something that I did with my breakdown. And it really, I mean, it was clearly not the right thing to be doing at all. But I think that I would have felt less on my own about it if it was more of a conversation that was happening. Because it gets quite stressful. I mean, like if you've hurt yourself in the past, so if you have any like evidence of that on your body, it's kind of stressful when it gets to like, you know, summertime, or you want to wear a certain thing, or you know, it could even be if you're like involved with somebody for the first time afterwards. And I think that that really adds to the whole notion that you'll never be happy again because you can never share this part of your body again. Like people can never see this because it associates all these other things to it. And I think that for me, like I have marks on my leg, on my thigh, and you know, they're there, they're going to be there. They've been there now for 2 years or so. And it freaked me out so much at the start, during summertime, because I was like, this in Ireland, I mean, you know, you can get away with it. I was living in London last summer, okay? It was 38 degrees. Oh, it's sunny there. It was 38 degrees and I was going to work. And I was like, what in hell am I doing right now? I really just wanted to wear nothing, obviously. But the best I could come up with was like a light skirt. You know, get a bit of breeze going, hopefully not die of heat stroke on my way. But I knew that in putting on the skirt, there were going to be lines visible on my leg. And that was about, like, honestly, it was about a 5 minute conversation with myself where I was just like, you're wearing the fucking skirt. You're wearing a skirt. Like, focus on the fact that your legs are probably going to get sunburned rather than that people are going to look at your leg and go, oh my God, you psycho. Are you going to then take a knife and kill all of us here too? Because your brain goes to crazy places when you start to think about like how people might interpret you, or how they might read things to do with you, especially when it comes to things that aren't talked about in the mainstream.
I think when people see something physical, they just have no idea how to deal with it.
At all.
It's that thing, it's either stare at it or ask inappropriate questions. Because like I've like surgical scars and, you know, use a wheelchair and that kind of thing. And I would have talked myself into a stupor for years to cover myself up. And then I kind of realized if I keep covering myself up, then that someone else might look at me and think that they have to keep covering up. So I was like, okay, just deal with it. Just like wear shorts, go swimming.
Yeah.
Because you have to do it. And if people stare, that's completely their problem.
Exactly.
And it is, because people, the way that our bodies are looked at and thought of, it doesn't feel like it's always your story to tell, because people keep wanting to know what it is, but like not in the right way. So it's such a difficult thing to talk about.
Yeah.
And I think with self-harm as well, it's so common with young girls.
Yeah.
More so than it is men. And again, like, I just have so many memories of people I went to school with where you would see it and then you'd see them pull their sleeves down, and it's just this constant circle of shame. And
totally.
And when I was in school like 17 years ago, and nothing has changed.
No, it hasn't changed. Like, you walk around and you're trying to like pull your thing, like your garment down a bit, or sit in a certain way or whatever. And it's all tied up with trying to not make people feel uncomfortable. But I mean, what is that doing for, you know, the teenage girl in school who is hiding her own scars? You know, I mean, I think that it was, a lot of it was to do with accepting that I had done it for me, accepting that that was, you know, a thing that I partook in, accepting the consequences of that, which is that I have scars. And then being able to move into like, well, you know what, other people can deal with it. If I've put so much effort into accepting the fact that these fucking lines are going to be on my legs, well then like everyone else can piss off.
Because that's a lyric as well, isn't it? It's like, I want to wear shorts and I will wear shorts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like a big thing for me to just basically make that decision. And actively like fight back against the voice in your head that's telling you that like you're constantly making people uncomfortable, you're ruining people's day, like that kind of stuff. It's so easy for it to creep in. For ages I was like, oh my God, I can't show my scars because I'm going to trigger people, which I don't know, does that happen? I don't know, but I fully convinced myself that that's what I was going to do, which is such a exhausting kind of train of thought to,
and it's such a huge responsibility to take on yourself as well, to be worrying about completely. Everyone around you.
Yeah, no, completely, and an absolute waste of time. Like, so yeah, it took me about a year after my breakdown to be like, right, scars are here, they are what they are, we all, you know, somewhat move on. But it is a topic that is just so sensitive to talk about for a lot of people. And I wanted to try and talk about it in the most true to myself way to do it, which is, you know, in a way that's like, because the lyrics of the song are like, the lines on my legs tell a story of a time when I spent too long hating myself from the outside in. Which I mean kind of is what self-harm is. And it took me quite a while to then actually figure out like what was the purpose of me doing it, even, because you do it in a sense of desperation. It's like it's an unhealthy coping mechanism for when you're really overwhelmed. And it can actually take quite a while for you to sit back and figure out, what are the mechanics of this? Why is this actually what I want to do? Like, why does this happen? Why does my brain say, I got the answer here, guys. Take it out on yourself physically. And it took me a while to figure that out and to accept it and say, well, I guess my brain is a brain that works like that. And talk about it with the right sensitivity to the topic, but also the right sensitivity to myself, where I would feel comfortable with it.
Because you are so eloquent talking about it. You were on the dark, it was called Darkness Into Light, wasn't that the name of the TV show? Yeah. So that was on Virgin Media during the week, and I assume it's going to be repeated, because it was an incredible watch, just to hear all the different stories from different people.
It's
and
so sad.
It is so sad, and it shows just the waves of sadness that kind of ripple throughout a community. And it shows the great work that an event like Darkness Into Light does, where I think it was you who actually said it, it's like you just realized that you are not alone, like you're walking with hundreds and hundreds of people. And it was just incredible. And you touched on self-harm in the TV show, and I don't think I'd ever seen it been spoken about in the way that you've been speaking about it, and it helped me understand things.
Totally. I mean, it's like I only know, you know, how I'm comfortable talking about it through having so many conversations with like my therapist and stuff about it, and figuring out like how much to talk about something before it becomes a weight on yourself, and how much to expose yourself or what happened to you while still remaining healthy yourself. And I think that self-harm, because like there's obviously so many different ways that people do it and stuff, and the uniting thing though is that, you know, you're physically hurting yourself and you're supposed to feel ashamed about it. And I think that for me it took a long time talking to my therapist to kind of be like, no, I'm okay with people knowing this thing. It actually, like, because this thing happened, right, when I released Hallways, and I released it with the actual, like, with the context of the song, because I thought it was important, because I'd had conversations with people who were working in mental health about how important it was for creative stuff to be available, like creative facilities to be available for people in places like hospitals. So I actually thought, I'm so lucky to have been able to get chance to go to hospital, you know, kind of start to see the light a bit. So it's really important then for there to be somebody trying to talk about how we need to not be cutting funding to these things. And, you know, putting out Hallways, everyone was like, oh my God, you're telling everybody that you went through this. And I was like, yeah, because it makes my life a million times easier. Like, having the conversation with your coworker when you go back to work, when they're like, oh, where have you been? And you're like, oh, you know, on a cruise. Where have I been? On a journey. Like, it's a very, I don't get uncomfortable about a lot of things. But that was just like, because I didn't want to make people feel uncomfortable in themselves. So when I went back to work, like my workplace, they were so good about it and everything. But like, I'd say like, oh yeah, no, I was in hospital, because I was out of work for months. Like, and I'd say like, oh yeah, I was in hospital. And then they're like, oh no, like, did you get sick or something? And you could tell that they're talking about a physical sickness. Mm. And I'd be like, yeah, no, I was actually really unwell. And they'd be like, and oh, has it cleared up now or what? And I'm like, I mean, I guess. Like, you know, it's always going to be there. And then they're getting real freaked out. And you just have to then be like, no, no, I was in a psychiatric hospital. Okay, that's actually what was happening. So for me, being open and talking about the whole context of hallways was actually like the easiest thing ever, because then everyone knows in one go and I don't need to have so many one-on-one conversations with people, having to like even convince them that I'm not trying to kill myself anymore, which is an exhausting thing to do, to be honest. And like, so many people are so uncomfortable talking about suicide, completely fair enough, but like, trying to tell your friend like, well, actually, you know, this thing happened and I did this thing, and like, you then have to see their heartbreak in front of you, because they obviously care about you and that's a wonderful thing, but you then have to do the whole like, no, I'm not trying to do it now, it's okay. And then they're freaking out and it's a whole big thing. So it was so easy to literally just like do a few interviews and be like, boom, it's out in the world.
Hit send.
Yeah, it was exactly, I'm like, oh my God. I felt like I was gossip girling myself. Where it's just like, it's out. Like, everyone can react how they want to react. And some people do react weirdly and that's totally on them. But like, that's the thing. Like, I'm now comfortable 2 years on releasing two and talking about self-harm and stuff. And basically just being like, yeah, I know you were staring at my leg. That's fine. It's done. Like, if you're not comfortable talking about it with me, that's totally fine. But maybe it will open your eyes to the fact that it would be nicer if people didn't have so much shame around it.
How has your relationship with music kind of changed along the way? Like, has this changed your productivity? You tapped into like a big part of yourself with these two songs, has that changed how you look at how you create songs?
It has. It's made me a bit more relaxed in a way, which I think is a good thing. Also, could be the meds, who knows? But it has really given me a kind of a sense of breathing room with the stuff that I'm making, where I am happy putting things out now quicker. Like a quicker turnaround. So like, I finished two last month and now I'm putting it out. Like, that's like unheard of for me. I sit on songs for like a year before I put them out. But I put out a song called Bones in like November, and I had written that over the summer. And I think I'm just getting a lot more comfortable with being like, I've made this thing. Here you go. Kind of like, just do what you want with it. But I'm getting a lot more comfortable sharing things quicker. And I think that's a positive step at the moment, because, you know, when you're not putting out work, you're ultimately, my approach to music is kind of writing music for myself, like straight off the bat. I try to write music that helps me in a way, but also is something that like, I think I would like to listen to, or I would like to hear. And I get so much out of it. But when I put out Hallways, I mean, it seemed to do things for people, which was honestly like quite unexpected. And people did seem to get a fair bit out of it, which was really nice. I mean, it's not like a big audience, but I think it's like it's more of like an engaged one. And my relationship with the people that listened to it and got something out of it is maybe like more of an intimate kind of one than, you know, people with a much bigger audience, which is honestly really lovely. And it creates this kind of sharing experience around the stuff that I'm talking about or the stuff that I'm making. So I think that with that, I have become a lot more comfortable, even with like the people who are listening to my stuff. So I'm not as worried now, and I can just put things out quicker and be like, I wrote this thing, and now like 6 months down the line, it's going to be online. Like, that's so bizarre to me, to be approaching anything like that. Like, it's such an exciting new way for me to give myself that freedom to do it.
And it's like what you said about Hallways, where when you look back at the emotional space where you're at, you're kind of like, wow, I can't believe that was the same brain.
Oh my God, completely. I'm like, what?
But it's nice to know that you can accept that you can put out a song and know that that's exactly how you feel in that moment. And then a year later, be like, I could be a different person, but that doesn't matter because it's just important.
Exactly, completely. And like my songs are just kind of like, I mean, I think loads of music is, I don't think this is anything that I'm doing particularly special, but my songs are very much just like a document of a time and a feeling I was having in a time. And I work very hard for them to depict the feeling or the moment, you know, as kind of authentically as possible. But it is just a time. And I think that I've had people before who like say to me that in person, I'm not how they expected me to be because my music's real sad. And like, it's very much like music for introverts and like that whole kind of thing. And I hope those people weren't insulting me or being disappointed when I was, you know, you'd be talking to people at gigs or whatever, and they're just like, whoa, like, you're not at all what I expected you to be like. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't really know. Like, I am what I am, I guess. And like with my live shows, people, I work really hard on my live shows because it's like, try to make it kind of like an audiovisual experience, kind of like installation work. So I make video work that I have kind of incorporated in. And the video work is all filmed by me at the times when I was making the songs. So it's like, because a lot of the time, like if you're writing something and you get stuck somewhere, you like go out for a walk or something like that, and I'll take my phone and I just like, I don't know, video the path for a while, or like if I pass like a bush that has really interesting shaped leaves or something, like I try to document the time visually as well and then put them together to make my visuals for my live show. So I think some people get the idea that it's like meant to be only this very like immersive, intense feelings type of deal with me. But like, I like jokes. You know? Yeah. Like, I do. I like jokes. I like having a laugh. Like, it's fine. But yeah, I think it's important as well, like for me to show that like people are multifaceted, and you know, you can have your very reflective and introspective parts of you, and you know, you can experience your depression and all that kind of stuff. But it's like what we were saying earlier about like, you only know happiness if you have sadness. Like, what I actually love to do with my live shows is like in between have like quite light chat. Because I love that. I love the idea of like, you're so deeply in something really immersive and everything's so intense and you're remembering your breakup from 7 years ago and it's all so much and you're getting overwhelmed and oh my God, why is it more visuals of leaves? And then you're like, what the fuck is she talking about in between a song? Like, I think that's really important for me anyway. And I remember like years ago, there was like a live review that was like, I don't know if I was watching a gig or a stand-up comedy set. And I was like, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Like, I don't really know.
Yeah, what's the problem, guy?
What's your issue, mate? Definitely a man who wrote that. But like, I love going to things that are like very dark humor based. And I think that, you know, when you have mental health problems or have been through basically anything dark in life, I mean, whether that's grief or anything, like you have to kind of find a way to laugh through it. And for me, it's important to have that kind of element to my performances as well.
And I think if it bounces off, if you are kind of bouncing between kind of the light and dark on stage as well, it just proves the multifaceted parts of being a human and being an artist. Like, if you keep living within that kind of low zone, like that's not good.
Oh my God, I don't want to know myself. If I would be so annoying. Are you kidding me? I already wear black polo necks most of the time. Like, if I were to walk around even more like, oh my God, I'm an artist, no one would talk to me again, especially not my family. And that would be totally fair enough. Like Poppy would leave, the dog would be gone. Like, fair. She'd be like, I'm so bored of you.
Packing up her bag, going,
she
I'm
would
leaving.
Be packing her bag, going into my mom's room next door, and that's it. Our relationship is over.
So, album, is there there's an album in the works? Album,
yeah,
almost.
There is an album in the works. Yeah, I have literally been saying that for, I'm gonna say 2 years now, but I swear to God, it's
your productivity is just,
oh my God, I'm ramping up, I'm doing things. Yeah, I've kind of in the past, basically, I moved to London last year because I'm a dickhead. It just adds to the whole, like, I'm wearing black polo next thing. I moved to London because I got a job in the music industry. It just takes a lot of energy to move somewhere. I don't know. Do people talk about that enough? It kind of, when I moved, I was just exhausted the entire time.
Oh my God. I lasted 5 months in London. Like, it was.
It's so tiring.
I will only go back there when I'm rich, as like base level rich.
I mean, completely. I am. Fucking poor, like Jesus Christ,
it is a bad place to be with no money.
It's awful. It's, I mean, I love it, but like Jesus Christ. So moving to London last May, I was like very, my head was not in the right space to be like working on my music career. So I was literally like, I'm trying to figure out where I am in a massive city, like how do I get to my job? Like all that kind of stuff, that really like mundane stuff. But when you move somewhere, it is actually so tiring and so overwhelming. So it's actually only since maybe just before Christmas where I was kind of like, no, maybe I should like actually do more with this music thing. And I mean, I had booked a bunch of shows around Ireland and some in the UK that unfortunately are not happening anymore, which sucks. But we'll get back to that. You know, it's fine.
2021. That's our gonna be our
year. 2021. Can't wait. I'll see you then, Bristol.
Oh, thank you so much for talking to me.
Yeah, thank you for talking to me.
Oh, listen, we were talking to each other.
We <That's> were. <it. laughs> Someday we'll talk in person, Louise.
I know. Someday we will actually disco side by side.